I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and you're listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business. My guest today is Hector Cevedo. Hector grew up in South Waco as the son of Mexican immigrants, and beginning next week, will serve District 2 as its city council member. But first, it's the Chef's Corner with Corey McIntyre. I'm now joined in studio by Chef Corey McIntyre for the Chef's Corner, where he comes in every month and tells us what's fresh and in season. Corey, what's got your eye?
You know, right now we have, and I might have talked about this last time, but cabbage is like my thing right now. I love cabbage. It's just, you can use it so many different ways. We're using it, we're grilling it and kind of treating it like a brisket and grilling it, basting it with barbecue, getting it nice and charred and smoky, then putting a whole bunch of dusty peanuts over the top of it. It's just so nice. And chow chow, always pickling cabbage, something, you know, we grew up in Georgia doing. One of my favorite things to use cabbage for. And then we also take cabbage and shred it and almost treat it like barbacoa. So we're putting achote in there, which is a mixture of like cumin and annatto, and really braising it down for a really long time and getting it nice and stringy, almost like barbacoa.
Something for the vegetarians in Waco's eating community that are often underserved. So I'm glad to hear that's on the menu there. Chef, when you get the taste of fresh cabbage or yummy strawberries just off the vine, you want to have that more. And we've been able to have a great farmer's market that happens on Saturdays, but there's a demand for more fresh produce more frequently. So just starting now, the Waco Downtown Farmer's Market is expanding options where you can order on Monday and you can pick up on Tuesday from the food hub in East Waco. Do you see this as a way to push the ball forward a little bit for Wacoans having access to fresh ingredients?
100%. I think that people are really loving what they get from the farmer's market. And sometimes, you know, Saturdays are just a little too heavy for people. They can't make it down there, or it's too hot or whatever. Maybe it's raining one day. But, you know, we have these producers, you know, people who are making jams and pickles and jellies and stuff like that. And then you have these farmers who are not just growing to sell on Saturday. They're growing to kind of sell for a season. You know, they've got 500 pounds of, let's say, cabbage or carrots or whatever that can't make its way out the door on Saturday. Now they get a new market where they can push things out the door on Tuesday, really get to know their customers a little bit better, and get people fresher food more often.
The Waco Food Hub is in East Waco on Dallas Street, just off of Elm Avenue. And it's a collection of some folks from Homestead Heritage mm-hmm. who have wanted to bring a lot of their operations that they do there, like the Brazos Valley cheeses, make it a little bit more central and commercial. What are you hearing about this Waco Food Hub, and what do you think it could portend for the culinary scene in Waco?
I think that it's going to get people talking a lot more about fresher food. You know, Mark with Brazos Valley Cheese is making some of the best cheese in the state of Texas, and I think being able to bring it closer to Waco and kind of tying into the, you know, obviously all of the tourists that we have and then all the people that live here that are wanting better products, I think giving them a outlet to be able to talk to people and get closer to their food, I think that's the goal, is to get people closer to their food. Because right now it's like that Saturday thing at the market, and sometimes the conversation doesn't happen. And I think that this will help people who are maybe sitting in their house canning stuff, wanting to sell it, or like making, you know, fruit bars or granolas or crackers for their family or their friends, and they want to sell it. They want to start an enterprise out of it. The Waco Food Hub is going to allow those kind of things to happen. And I think, you know, you and I both know, underserved market of food trucks. You know, they're going to have a total commissary kitchen over there that's going to help people be able to grow their business and work out of a licensed kitchen that, you know, as we know, it's hard to find those. And I think it's going to be great. And one of the things I think is really cool is that the building that they're in is the old farmer's market building.
Right.
It's kind of tying it all back together.
Chef Corey McIntyre opening the door to the Chef's Corner for me and all of our listeners here on Downtown Depot. Thanks for stopping by this month.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
This is The Word on the Street, where we put boots on the ground to investigate interesting events happening in our city. The Cotown Collab is a local market and workshop seminar geared toward local community and businesses happening next weekend downtown at the Phoenix. Maggie Dietrich of Margaret Co. is one of the founders. Tell us a little bit what the idea for the Cotown collab is.
Yeah, so we really wanted to focus on the growth of Waco and bring locals back to downtown. And so we're focusing on the growth, new and old, with different businesses and focusing on all the amazing talent that's downtown.
And what is your role in the project?
So I am hosting this market. Ashley and I both have done over 60 markets together. And so we just felt like it was time for Waco to come together and just really showcase everybody under one roof.
At the Phoenix, this will be on May 10th from 2 to 8 p.m. and on May 11th from 9 until 6 p.m. There are vendors who are selling their goods, but also a number of workshops where people can go and learn.
Yes. We have over 40 vendors, all local to Waco, and 6 workshops that are going to be happening on Saturday. So we have charcuterie board workshops, wine sommelier testing,
yoga, lettering,
yes.
Floral,
we have
cookies.
It all, and I'm so excited for all of just this incredible talent that's going to be under one roof.
And it looks like with this collection of workshops that you really have run the gamut. There's something for everybody.
Yes, for sure. And I think what's great, if with it being on Mother's Day weekend, you can have the Mother's Day, hang out with your kids or your sisters or girlfriends. But then there's also different ones for people who just want to come and have a good time, too.
Tell me a little bit about the heart that Ashley and you have for driving people downtown. Why is that important?
I think just with all the growth, people are scared to come downtown sometimes. And so just because it's busy, but like we're all still down there and we also got our starts from the locals. And so we just want to do this for them and just appreciate them for supporting us.
Who are a couple of the vendors that you could expect to see at the Cotown collab?
Oh, gosh, there's so many. Black Daisy Boutique, Lovely Enterprise. We have Corey McIntyre. He's going to be leading the charcuterie board workshop. There's just tons. I mean, I could go on and on.
You got to go and check it out for yourself.
Yes, definitely.
Maggie Dietrich is the owner of Margaret Co., which will also be present at the Cotown Collab next weekend, May 10th and 11th at the Phoenix Ballroom. Maggie, thank you so much for letting us know.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Mexican food is a blanket term. Thankfully for those of us living in Waco, we get such diverse Mexican culture that the segment has fragmented. Mi Jalisco Grill specializes in tastes coming from the capital, Guadalajara. Taqueria Zacatecas on La Salle features elotes and mole popular in the central state. On 25th Street in North Waco, a mother and son spend their days rolling out tortilla and braising meats to provide hungry Wacoans with a taste of Michoacan.
Just simple food, nothing really crazy, nothing fancy.
Eric Gama is the owner of Rufi's Casino.
A lot of Michoacan style food is your pambazos, your sopes, a lot of coarse cornmeal, a lot of chicken, a little bit of pork, more like the beans and veggies.
Since opening in January 2015, the restaurant has built a reputation for bold flavors and rich family heritage.
Rufi's Casino is a Michoacense style food that I grew up eating as a kid. I decided to name it after my mom, which is Rufina. So it's just a little local place that we have. We do, try to make everything by hand, make everything fresh as possible. And of course, always put a little bit of love in the ingredients.
Foodies keep coming back for the salsas, which are often made with guajillo chilies or fruit. And also for the friendly banter between Eric and his mom.
Our blender broke yesterday. And she's never happy about it.
I'm blessed to live just a few streets away from Rufi's, so I've been able to cycle through the menu a couple times, even trying adventurous plates like cerdos, goat brains, sourced from the livestock on the Gama family farm. If you're already feeling queasy, don't be scared. The menu offers a cheeseburger, Tex-Mex favorites like enchiladas and nachos, and my favorite morning breakfast.
Pork chop plate, eggs over easy.
In the kitchen, as my meat sizzles on the grill, Rufina lets me sample a red soup on the stovetop. Eric's parents were raised in Michoacán, a state that his sisters and he visited regularly until deemed unsafe due to cartel activity. But despite its recent downturn, the region of Rufina's youth instilled characteristics that she has passed down.
So both my parents grew up in close to Tuzantla, which is a town, the biggest town they have across the region, because they're both from the mountainsides of the area. My mom was the last of 14, 16 kids, so she wasn't taught to play with dolls or play with little toys. It was more like go chop wood, make tortillas.
Rufina hasn't only shared the regional secrets with her family. Thanks to Eric and his mother, Now all of Waco gets a taste of Michoacan. I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, shining the small business spotlight on Rufy's Casino. The Small Business Spotlight is presented by American Bank, with three locations in town, including an expanded branch at Franklin and Fourth. I'm now joined in studio by Hector Sabido. On May 14th, Hector will be sworn in as the District 2 City Councilman. Welcome to Downtown Depot.
Thank you so much, Austin, for having me. It's a pleasure to be here this morning. Thank you.
What's your Waco history, Hector?
So, you know, I'm a Waco native through and through. I was born in Waco, Texas, and grew up in Waco, went to high school here, went to Baylor University, met my wife, and we just love being in Waco, and we reside here, and our families are here, so we have seen Waco 15 years ago when it wasn't what it is today, and how it's grown over the years, and we just absolutely love the transformation that's been going on within our city.
You were born in Waco, but your parents moved here from Mexico.
That is correct. So when my parents, when they were younger, 17, 18 years old, as many immigrants, you know, they come to the United States looking for a better life. And so they came with my sister, who was 1 year old at the time, and came to Waco out of all places because my dad had family here. And so still grew up with the Mexican culture. You know, Spanish was the first language that I learned. And even though we were born here, we were brought up with the Mexican culture in mind, and so that has always stuck with me, even things that we are passing down to our children right now. But my parents definitely migrated here, and so I am a first-generation Mexican-American, I should say.
What were some of your experiences growing up as a Mexican-American in the area?
Absolutely. You know, so even, you know, growing up in Waco, Texas in the 80s and early 90s, you know, even the Mexican culture wasn't as popular as it is now, and so it was still very taboo to speak Spanish in public. I remember even starting kindergarten and not knowing any English at all, and I would come home crying because all I spoke was Spanish and none of my teachers spoke English. So it was, I guess, a very traumatizing time for me because I still remember it. So it wasn't as prevalent as it is now. You definitely didn't have the amount of Mexican culture, restaurants, food, et cetera, that you had, that we have now in Waco. And so it was definitely a different time. There were no ESL classes at that time. So you learned English, really. They threw you in the classroom, and that's how you learned. And so even having parents that weren't very familiar with the language, they were still learning as well. It was up to myself just to get in the classroom and learn it. And so I remember making a commitment to myself that I would learn this, that I would learn this language in spite of what it took. And so it was very difficult, very challenging growing up in that era. Even you have within the Hispanic culture, you have those that have migrated here from another country, and then those that were born here and grew up with the American culture. So even that was very two different groups in going to school. And so trying to find yourself of which group do I really belong to. But I'm grateful that things have immersed a little bit better. The cultures have immersed a little bit better. And so it's not as divisive as it was years ago when I was growing up.
I ran into this almost every day working at the Pocio store, where a Hispanic family will come in and it's the little kid who orders for the whole
Absolutely.
Family because the parents don't speak English. Did you have pressure that you felt growing up, sort of trying to be the connector between your parents and their culture and this new culture that you were learning and experiencing?
Absolutely. You know, you definitely come, whether you go to order ice cream, whether you're going to buy a vehicle, whether you're going to shop for school clothes, you always were, at an early age, your parents depended on you to be the translator, depended on us to be the translator. Even to this day, my parents speak English and they know the language, but they still depend on their kids and their grandkids to be the translator for them. And so you definitely have that pressure of, I want to make sure that I'm doing everything that I can to help my parents out. And so you do grow up with that, but in a way, you appreciate it because it learns. Once again, it's that family culture. You learn how to take care of your parents, and you kind of become like the forerunner in your family to to be that light for your family, I guess, for lack of better words. And so you still see it today, you know, even working with Hispanic families at another radio station, you still see the kids coming in and bringing their parents and translating for them at schools and translating for them when they do business deals. And so it's still very common today.
You took that mantle upon yourself to bridge the cultural divide, and you're now doing it in a much wider realm, walking into this city council position for District 2.
Yes, sir. You know, I'm very excited about the opportunity. I will say that you're still learning that fine line between those that have migrated here, those that have grown up here, even though they're Hispanic, but they've grown up here in the States. And then, of course, you throw in all the other ethnicities and races that are here in Waco as well, because, I mean, Waco is very well diversified. And so you do want to be, at least I do, I want to be a people that represents everyone, not just a particular group. I love the fact one of my goals is to involve every race in District 2, not just be a champion for the Hispanic race, but also be a champion for the African-American race, also be a champion for the Caucasian race, et cetera. And so I'm a firm believer that when we work together and we all come together to make our city better, we all benefit from it.
Your predecessor, Alice Rodriguez, spent over two decades in the District 2 City Council seat.
Yes, sir.
What are some of the things that you learned from watching Alice do the job?
Let me tell you, I admire Alice so much. She is definitely a hardworking woman. Even for her to be a Hispanic woman in that seat, it was one thing for a Hispanic to be in that seat, but a Hispanic woman made it that much more interesting and better in my perspective. You know, Alice has always been a champion for the people in District 2, and so I've seen her commitment to our district. I've seen her take time out of her own busy schedule to go visit neighbors and to go visit the citizens of District 2 and just really see what the needs were. In spite of opposition that I'm sure every political candidate faces, she still moved forward and didn't allow a few individuals to really take away from the big picture that she was trying to accomplish. And she's done a lot of great things in our district. A lot of the development that's going on in South Waco and District 2 is because of Alice. So I definitely have nothing but respect for her.
When I look at a map of District 2, it seems like the areas that are now going to be under your control, there's so much activity going on. You've got the Silo area.
Right.
You've got the LaSalle corridor, which
exactly.
has been in the news recently. Some mm-hmm. more rural areas to the south and east.
Uh-huh.
What is your game plan for making sure that you are equitably relating all of the issues that your
sure.
members face and bringing those to council?
You know, that's a great question, Austin. I do want to say that I am a champion for economic development. It is definitely needed in our city and in our community. I love the fact that businesses are wanting to start a new business in District 2, whether it be the Silos, whether it be the LaSalle Avenue corridor, whether it be South Waco or Baylor University. And so I love the fact that we have all this development going on in our district. However, it's also important for me to represent those that have been here in South Waco or the area 30, 40 years and making sure that they are not feeling intimidated or pressured to be moved out of their homes. And so it definitely takes a conscious effort for me to know the concerns of the citizens, for me to know what's important to them and how we can include them in the growth. By no means do I want to push anybody out of their homes or does the city want to push, but it's more of a how do we include them in the growth? And now I'm a champion also for making sure that all of our neighborhoods are safe, but also they have the same mentality that it could be a mixed income area. And that's what you eventually want in every neighborhood and in every city. There's no reason why we can't have people of all backgrounds, of all statuses living on the same street. And so that's one thing that I want to work towards. In fact, the street that I currently live on, you will definitely see a variety of those that come from all backgrounds and all statuses. And so I would love to see that for all of District 2. So the goal is not to push people out. The goal is to still grow our area, but with the people that are here already.
You're hearing from Hector Sabido, soon to be the city council member for District 2. When you talk about pushing people out, that's a conversation revolving around property taxes. It's something that communities all across the state are discussing.
Absolutely.
What have been your conversations with people in your district, and what is the right way to attack this problem?
You know, that's a great question. Even though the city does not control property taxes, I've realized that even going out and going door to door and chatting with folks, that is definitely a top concern for constituents. And if it's a concern for them, it's a concern for me as well. And so, you know, last week I invited Joe Bobber from the McLennan County Appraisal District, and we brought him to the Hispanic Chamber and said, hey, let's hear why property taxes are going up here in Central Texas the way they are, and let's talk about some ideas, or share with us some ideas on how we can maybe protest our taxes. And so Joe Bobber, along with some of his staff, came to the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, and we had about 60 to 50 people out there, and he really just made a one-hour presentation of, here's why the property taxes go up, here are some ideas that you can do to contest those property taxes, and here's what you have to look forward to. And even though you wish you could say, well, property taxes are going down, but I think the consensus was when people left there, there was great information that was shared, and that it really helped them plan for down the road. And so maybe ideas or tips that they didn't know people could do, he shared with them. And so those are things that we definitely need to discuss, and are how we can equip the people better to have those conversations about property taxes.
I'm sure you'd have to get deep in the weeds to know all of the issues, but can you give me an idea just generally of why property taxes are rising in the state?
You know, it definitely, of course, we all know, we all love Chip and Joanna, and that has a big part to do with it as well. But even just so, taxes are going up in the state of Texas, and so actually McLennan County and Waco are probably on the lower end of those property taxes versus some of the other cities in the state. And so it's just transition over time, you know what I mean? There's new buildings that are taking place, new bills that are being passed in the state of Texas, and so that eventually affects everybody, even down here in Waco, Texas.
And is there some connection between the funds that used to go towards schools that the state used to provide? Those are now often being taken in by property taxes, which is the rise.
Absolutely. So you see more the state paying less and less for public education. Mm. And so for that gap to be covered, it's coming out of property taxes as well. And so we are paying property taxes not only for Waco ISD and the schools around this area, but maybe even in other public school districts as well in the state. So you definitely see the percentage that property taxes are covering for public education increase over the years.
And the issue of property taxes is particularly difficult for the people who were living close to the Magnolia Silos, which 5 years ago,
right,
they could afford their property taxes, right, and now they might not be able to.
Yes, sir. I mean, so you know, for example, one lady that I chatted with that maybe lives like four or five blocks from the Silos, you know, a couple years ago, her taxes were $700-$800 a year. Now she's looking at $1,500 to $1,700 a year. And so when you have that type of jump in a matter of 4 years or less, it's definitely frightening for the person that lives in that house, especially when they're on the fixed income. So we definitely need to have those conversations of how do we make it effective and possible for that person to still stay in her home that she's been in for 30 years, because the goal is to keep her there. That is her home that's been paid off for, and that is her home that she desires to live the rest of her life in, and she should have that same desire and that dream met for her.
A big push for you in your tenure as the city councilman for District 2 is creating diverse and safe neighborhoods.
Absolutely.
Within District 2.
Yes, sir. So, you know, South Waco in the past hasn't been known to be probably one of the safest areas in the city. But with all the development going on, I mean, I want to see safer neighborhoods. I want to see where people feel comfortable walking their kids or letting their kids play in the streets or walking their dogs, or people taking a jog up and down LaSalle Avenue for exercise reasons. So that is definitely one of my goals. And then the second goal is to make it all inclusive. Even though in the past, South Waco has been known for it to be a Hispanic neighborhood or Hispanic area of the city, now you see it more diversified. Now you see it more African Americans in the city. You see more Caucasians in South Waco. And so my goal is to definitely make it all inclusive, because that's just what our city is made up of. And so we have to be a representation of who our city is.
I had a conversation with John Calloway from Mission Waco a couple days ago, And he was talking about the grocery store that they have there.
Right.
And he was surprised by the number of Hispanic shoppers that they have. They assume just because the neighborhood is going to be a lot of black and white people who live in the area. But because they've noticed that there is such an influx of Hispanic people living in the area, they have now, in this Colcord Center development, opened up a Mexican ice cream shop that will be opening soon. But it's important to recognize the demographic, and the demographics change, and you want to make sure that you are serving the people who live in your neighborhood.
Absolutely. You know, in South Waco, there's an internal pride that's saying that you're from South Waco, graduating from University High School, and that is great. I'm all for that. I'm a South Waco boy through and through, but there also you have to acknowledge that demographics change. You have Baylor now in District 2, which includes South Waco, and they're expanding even outside of the four walls of the university. And so you see that change. And so you want to make sure that every constituent that is in your district that you represent them to the best of your ability. And so it's not just for one group of people, but it's for everybody living in that area.
What is your vision personally for this LaSalle corridor?
You know, I definitely want to see LaSalle where people, it's a place where people can go shop, where they can go out to eat with their family, where people you see people exercising, where you see people going up and down the LaSalle Avenue corridor. It's just another option for people to go to when they come visit Waco, Texas. And it's also a great place for people that live in Waco, Texas. And so my vision is just to see it thriving, just to see it growing, that it is a family atmosphere, that it's safe, and that people just enjoy going down there on the weekend and having a spending a Saturday afternoon there.
As a Mexican-American living in Waco, you want to make sure that you are making decisions that are reflective not just of your Hispanic heritage, but also for the greater Waco community in general. But for Mexican-Americans living in the area who maybe aren't seeking public office, but they do want to make sure that their communities are strong, what is your best advice for those people of reasons why they should or ways that they can get involved?
You know, it's no secret that the Hispanic or Mexican-American demographic continues to increase, not only in Waco, but in the state of Texas. And so, you know, we're projecting that in a few years that the Hispanic culture will outnumber any other ethnicity here in the state. And so it's important that we have a voice. It's important that we step up to the plate and that we represent our people. But if there is someone that's not seeking public office, you still can get involved to make a difference. There's neighborhood associations that that you can get involved. There's city boards and commissions that you can get involved. And so my best advice is don't let someone else make the decision for you. You step up to the table and you have a voice at that table, and you be a champion for your people and make a decision for them and not allow someone else to make that decision for you.
Hector Sabido is soon to be elected as the city council member representing District 2. Hector, thank you so much for coming on Downtown Depot.
Austin, thank you so much for having me. It was truly a pleasure to be on your show.
Thanks again to Hector Sabido, Corey McIntyre, Rufy's Casino, American Bank, Maggie Dietrich of the Cotown Collab, and you for tuning in. I knew I wanted to feature a Mexican-owned business for this month's Small Business Spotlight, so I posted about it on Waco Business News social media pages. I got dozens of responses and obviously could only pick one, but I'm very happy to spotlight Rufy's and so grateful for your participation online and here on KWBU. I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and you've been listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business.